This is At The Line. I'm Ty, along with, let's start with Mac.
Hey, what's up? I didn't know we were doing our own introductions.
Nick.
My name's Mac.
My name is Nicholas.
Nick. And Noah.
I'm Noah. You probably have heard me before, so excited to be here.
This is honestly the most awkward way you could have entered us.
I know, like, and that's the beauty.
Weird.
That's the beauty of this podcast. I get to do what the fuck I want. So, you guys are just along for the ride. But today, on today's episode of At The Line, we're going to talk about the Summer League as Noah is in Vegas. We're going to talk about the free agency acquisitions as well. Some Spurs fan idiocy and over-under. Which way are we going? So first, let's get started, though, with the Summer League that's currently going on in beautiful, sunny Las Vegas for the first time in 2 years. And fortunately, Noah Magaro George over here is in Vegas. And I just got to ask, how has Vegas been to you so far, Noah?
It's been kind to me. I've won a little bit of money gambling. Thankfully, it wasn't my own money, so I had nothing to lose in the first place. Tom Petrini was very kind to me and lent me a couple of dollars, and we turned it into like $200, so that was pretty cool. And the basketball's been amazing. It's been really fun. Even though the Spurs aren't winning, it's just incredible to be here around so much basketball, so it's been great.
Bad luck to win preseason games, dude.
Facts, yeah.
Just like in football. Like, it's across all sports, right? It's like, it seems like it's pretty bad luck. I mean, like, who was it? Naismith, or is that how you say his last name? Naismith? Neesmith?
Neesmith. I think it's Neesmith.
Just dropped, like, 30-something points. Like, I'm not too worried.
So no, what's your favorite? What was your favorite? Like, are you doing slot machines? Are you doing the craps table? Are you guys playing, sitting down at, you know, blackjack?
Yeah,
what's your poison?
Yeah, we started off on this machine that Tom was like really into. It was the virtual horse betting, like horse racing. And he lent me some money and I dropped down all the way to like $12. Like, I had like nothing and he was down to like 19 and we were like down on our luck. Like, we were super down, like down bad, like almost no money left. We moved over to these like penny slots. We got back up to about $50. We hit the roulette. We got up to about $100. And then we went right back to the horses. And I was down to about 50, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put this $1 bet on this 256-1 odds horse. And, like, if it loses, who cares? Because, like, this is my last bet of the night. And it hit. Like, it won. It won the race. And so I picked up, like, 256 on that. Tom lost his, like, completely lost his shit. I lost my shit a little bit. And then we headed home. So it was amazing. Like, we did a lot of things, but the horse machine is, like, that's the shit. Like, it's the best thing that is there. 100%.
Are the hotels as cheap as my dad says they are?
I don't,
like,
know what cheap
I know at the Omni, I think you can get rooms right now for $29 a night.
Shut
wow.
up, dude. No
I feel
way.
Like
I swear
got
to God.
completely wow. like just screwed because I paid like $90 a night for the hotel I'm in, but it's like right next to the venue. Like, I literally walk.
That's
to
still
the venue.
Not
it's across
that's still
the street.
Bad. That's still not bad though. That's really good.
So
yeah, I'm happy with it.
So, oh, wait, sorry, not the Omni. Hold on.
So I was like, dude,
when
Omni
are you and Tom
going
to be walking down the strip in suits?
You know, I didn't bring a suit, so never, but we may hit that up tonight, or I might try to go by myself. I'm not really sure. I didn't really make any plans for tonight, just to kind of hang out with y'all for a little bit, so we'll see, but maybe tonight. Who knows?
Wow. All right, guys, here we go. Look at this. Luxor Hotel and Casino. It's the pyramid with the Sphinx outside. Yeah, it's dirt cheap. No,
what's dirt
here.
Cheap? You gotta give us a number.
So, like, if I were to go in Saturday the 14th and check out the 15th, one night, one room, two adults, you're looking at. Oh, that one actually didn't pop up. Well, on Expedia, depending on the days, you can get it for $39 a night.
Bullshit.
But that's beside the point. Hey, don't say that.
I think it might
that's
be like
than
a
Schwartz,
little more.
Texas.
Like, it might be a little more expensive right now because Summer League's going on. They're trying to take advantage of us, like the places that are near. Because, like, that's I looked it up. It's a 42-minute walk from the Luxor to the like
Ouch.
Thomas and Mack Center. And right now, I literally it's like an 8-minute walk. Like, it's
General
less than
chat.
Half a mile away.
You hunk of poop. So, I'm sure you have to do something to get those prices, but, like, my dad always told me that Vegas is super-duper cheap.
All right, final non-basketball question. Noah, how are you just dripping in drip?
Oh, tennis attire, dude. Dude, Noah's like the summer tennis dad, bro.
Like, first off, I wanted to like look a little bit professional while I was there, and they were the dress code they had sent us beforehand. If you were expecting to get credentials, was like polos and like shorts, and I was like, okay, I can do that because I've got a few polos, and this is like the chance for me to like break my thighs out, like bring my short shorts out.
Ooh,
and I absolutely did. Like every single day I have right now, I am wearing short shorts, and I said drip or die, and I've committed to it, and you know I'm living my best life.
My man, drip or die.
How's dripping with sweat? Because I hear Vegas is hot as shit.
It's bad, man. I'm like, my parents and my girlfriend were like, you need to wear sunscreen. I was like, no, I'm Hispanic. I don't need it. I'm good. And I am like, my ears are burned. My face is a little bit burned. But oh my God, it was like 106 for like three straight days, and it's a dry heat here. So I was like, I was dying.
Better.
It was so bad.
All right,
it was not fun.
All right, let's move on to basketball. The Spurs have not won a game as of this recording. As Matt turns on his sink that we can clearly hear.
Sorry guys, I'm making tortillas right now.
Here at the line, we bring you the number one quality audio there is. Until
Ty's
we don't.
Ty's gonna fucking hate me. Sorry, Ty.
That's a good ASMR, when you said that you were gonna be on your damn iPad.
Dude, it's just because like I gotta make the tortillas, dude. I need a water. I'm sorry.
Well,
before we move on, can I ask, like, what are the advantages of making homemade tortillas versus just like picking them up at HEB?
Oh my god!
Like, dude, is it worth it?
It's
so worth it, dude. So worth it.
Well,
if you ever come down, I'll make them again.
Mac, we gotta make a whole cooking video of just you cooking tortillas.
Okay, that works.
We'll make
like the only thing I can do. Just tortillas and beans. We'll do that.
Perfect. Sounds great. All right, let's now move on to basketball.
I put too much water because
I'm
nervous. So now I got to get some flour. But go ahead. Continue on.
The Spurs have not won a game yet in Summer League as of this recording. But we've been seeing some solid performances across the board, although we've had some injuries and players kind of sitting out. But Noah, go ahead and give your breakdown of what you've seen from this Summer Spurs team so far.
Yeah, so, like, I don't think results matter at all. Like, honestly, they could go 0-7 or 0-8 between, like, here and Salt Lake City, and I'd be completely fine as long as we're seeing Primo, Vassell, Trey Jones, and Joe Wieskamp go out there and just play well. Unfortunately for Devin, he's been sort of, like, hampered by an injury, like a nagging hamstring tightness since he was in Salt Lake City, so we haven't really seen the best of him, but Trey Jones has been really good. Like, this guy's too good to be in the G League. He's too good to be in the Summer League. Like, he's ready to play NBA minutes, even if that's just as a backup. And then with Primo, unfortunately, he didn't, like, play yesterday. But, you know, hopefully he plays the rest of the games because they just sat him out for precautionary measures. And he's looked good. Like, even though he's been inconsistent, he's young. Like, he's 18 years old. That's what you got to expect. But he's looked good.
In two games, Trey Jones is averaging nearly 20 points on 45% shooting. He's also attempting three threes a game on 33%, so not that great, but still, I like it. Five and a half assists, 3.5 rebounds on 4 turnovers, 1/2 a steal, and 1/2 a block per game. But yeah, I agree with you. Trey Jones has he missed all the Utah series and with the concussion protocol. But once he hit the floor, it seemed a little rusty, and then he found his rhythm, and he is arguably one of the best players on the court. Besides Devin Vassell. Devin Vassell has been amazing so far from the way that he's been scoring and defending. But then Trey Jones he's carrying the team with that playmaking. And I'm not going to be surprised if he's the first point guard off the bench next season at all.
So can
for sure.
I was going to say, do you think the reason why Trey Jones started a little bit slow to begin with? Because I know that there's some games where he looked kind of rough. Do you think it was just because of the rust and like not, it wasn't game speed that, you know, that he was used to, so he's getting back into it?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that. Like, you know, he didn't play for quite some time because of the, you know, like concussion protocol, but he started slow in both of the games he's played, but then really picked it up. And, you know, for me, the things that are really encouraging is like, yeah, he's not shooting well from three, but he's taking three attempts per game, which is exponentially more threes than he took in the G League bubble last year. Like last year, he looked allergic to shooting threes after he missed a few in the first couple games. And here he's being aggressive. He looks more fluid. He's doing step back jumpers in the mid range. He's taking some like behind the back dribbles and then pulling up. He's pulling up from threes, pulling up from mid range. He's crafty near the rim. His handle looks tighter. Like he just looks like a better player than a year ago. And that's a good thing considering, you know, Patty Mills is gone. They're going to need somebody to step up and really be able to carry the playmaking load. And potentially, if he wants to shoot more and he is more successful there, that could really help the Spurs. So I like what I've seen from Trey for sure.
And so some of our names that we have is Josh Primo. We got Joe Wieskamp. And so among the four picks that are playing, what do you think about Primo overall, though, since he's played only one, but we saw some of his Utah series as well?
Yeah, so Primo's, like I said earlier, he's kind of like inconsistent, and that's something you got to expect from someone who's 18 years old, and he's transitioning back into an on-ball role for this team where he played mostly off-ball as a cutter, as a spot-up shooter at Alabama. He had the eighth highest usage on the team, so he's really transitioning to a role that he hasn't played since he was in high school. And, of course, high school basketball is much different than NBA competition, even if it's just summer league competition. So I like what I've seen from him. He can pass with either hand. He can shoot really well from three when he has time to shoot. The shot prep is really good. And the thing that I think is really impressive from him is just his poise. Like, there's only been one moment in this whole summer league so far from him where I thought he looked overwhelmed. It was at the end of the game where he almost committed a turnover, and then, you know, Trey had to, like, try to make something happen, and he airballed the game winner. But other than that, like, Primo has looked really confident just at home playing against guys who are 2, 3, 4, you know, 5 years older than he is. So that really instills a lot of confidence for me in him.
And I get. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, I'm just going to, I mean, I'm kind of curious because, you know, the conversation's always going to be, especially because now we saw some of the other draftees on that night, like the conversation is always going to go back to, well, what about this other guy? You know, what about this other 18-year-old? And there was one 18-year-old in specific that unfortunately is some of our I-10 rivals that had a really good breakout game, you know, Şengün. How do you justify the Spurs, or even, you know, are you at that point to justify the Spurs taking Primo over Şengün? Like, do you think that eventually, you know, it's too early to tell, or do you think that there's a little bit that you can see, they can understand, like, oh, now I understand why the Spurs took Primo at this, you know, at 12 instead of going Şengün?
Well, like, first off, I think it's really important to remember that summer league competition is basically like G League competition. It's glorified G League competition, and Şengün won MVP as an 18-year-old. And probably the second best league in the world outside of the ACB and not counting the Euro League. So, you know, this isn't really anything that I'm surprised by. Like, this guy's supposed to come here and dominate. He dominated, again, like one of the best leagues in the world as an 18-year-old. Of course, he's going to dominate these guys who probably have never seen him before. They probably don't know his tendencies. And one of the things that I've really noticed, because I've watched the games with the Rockets, and these guys have no idea what he's capable of. Like, they don't know what his tendencies are, his skills. He's pump faking at three, and they're biting on it. They're leaving their feet. They're giving him a driving lane. They're giving him an advantage. The guy shot 19% from three last season. Like, that's not a guy you need to leave your feet to defend, especially beyond the arc. So I'm not really surprised. I think that he will be a little more limited at the NBA level. Like, if you look at the teams that are here right now, there are very few seven-footers. There are very few guys over 6'9". So he's basically one of the tallest guys here, one of the most mature guys with the most professional experience. I don't think that we're going to see the exact same thing in the NBA. So I don't think that there's going to be a problem justifying the Primo pick when we look at this like 5 years down the road.
I was going to say that Spurs don't have anyone that's over 7 foot on their team in for summer league. Like, I want to say, when I say Scal, is that
Scal's probably the tallest one.
Like, him and Renfro are like two of the tallest people.
Fucking garbage, dude. Well, maybe
Scal's
not garbage,
been bad.
I do
no,
not
he's
enjoy watching him play at all.
Dude, and that's because he was one of my favorite guys that they had picked up for the summer league. I was like, man, because, you know, he's had some NBA run. And I was like, oh, good. I was excited that they got him, but he's looked pretty fucking awful.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's probably a reason that he didn't play in the NBA last year, and that's because he's just really not that good at, like, NBA-level basketball. And he's looked bad.
Yeah, he's regressed
pretty
hard.
He's looked bad. But also, like, I think it's important to think of, like, they're not running the offense through him. They are having him set screens, but he's not really, like, rolling. He's just kind of a big body out there. Like, I'm convinced he's just a big body out there to, like, rebound, try to be a rim protector. But defense has never really been his strong suit. So
he
looks extra bad out there because of all those factors. And also, he's probably just not that great in terms of NBA competition. So sucks to suck, but LaVissier just hasn't been good.
Talking about the second round pick, just for the last of the picks, Joe Wieskamp. Now, he struggled in Utah, but honestly, the whole team and every other team in Utah was struggling. And he'd struggled in his first Vegas game. But his second Vegas game, he seemed to find his shooting stroke. But I think there's a lot more out of Wieskamp that we haven't seen yet that I think that we're going to at least see in these next two games, I would assume.
Yeah, so with Wieskamp, it's really tough to evaluate him right now. You know, preferably he's playing with a guy who can draw more attention and get him wide open. You know, he can move without the ball really well. He cuts well. He relocates without the ball. He can shoot really well. But those things don't really matter if you can't draw the defender who's assigned to you's attention away from you. And guys have absolutely just, like, stuck to him like glue. Like, the Spurs have tried putting him in the corner. They've tried putting him in, like, screening sets. Nothing's worked. He just hasn't gotten open. And even when he has gotten open, the shots just aren't falling. Like, the first game, he really struggled. The second game, he was 3 of 9 here. So that was kind of tough for him. And the last thing is, like, with Vassell going down and also Jordan Morris and Trey Jones sort of letting him have some more on-ball touches, like, it's just been rough. Like, that's not ever been his role. Probably hasn't been his role since he was in high school. And he's just going to struggle to create. And, like, we saw that when he got a steal, he went the other way. He was having, like, a one-man fast break, and then he got cut off, and he was like, I guess I'm just going to toss this right now. And he literally just, like, threw it, like, to the sideline and turned it over. So it's been rough for him, but I hold out hope just because he is a good shooter and he's going to have better spacing in the NBA, especially with San Antonio's roster.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Nick.
Anyone super excited to find out? Y'all probably knew. I didn't know. That Josh Primo is a true ambidextrous person.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's pretty cool. I mean,
because he shoots mainly right-handed, right?
Yeah, he shoots right-handed and he does everything else left-handed.
Left-handed, yeah. And apparently, like, people were bringing it up after watching him sign his contract left-handed. And then there was, like, a little clip or something or someone talking about it at the surface saying that, like, he's a true ambidextrous person, which I'm like, that could be really big for his game. Like, that could be really big for his game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Spurs scouting department is all ambidextrous, and they're like, hell yeah.
Being able to switch it up at the rim, man, when you go up.
I think even more importantly, like, if you've been watching him, he's made some really impressive, like, live dribble passes with both hands. Like, that's huge. If you can pass with both hands one-handed, that opens up so many opportunities. So, really, I've really come around on the Primo pick, especially, like, all I had was the context of his Alabama days. And then once I was provided the context of, like, his EYBL circuit numbers, you know, when he played in the FIBA championships as a 16-year-old for the U19 team, like, I feel more confident in this pick now, way more confident than I did on draft night when we had our, like, instant reaction.
Live reaction.
I wrote about this, and I said that I thought my live reaction was a little overblown just because I think all of ours were, because all of us had expectations of who we were wanting around 12, and for us to get a guy that was projected of mock drafts, which is all that we really had, to go late first round, it was definitely a shock to us. But, like, that same night, once I started watching some footage of him, seeing some more detailed scouting reports, I'm like, my confidence level skyrocketed for Primo, and I'm a little bit ashamed that I reacted the way I did.
Yeah, I tweeted about that too. You know what? Absolutely, like, and this may be way overblown, but what completely, like, because, you know, I had reservations up until a couple days ago about Primo, even though I still ended up liking the pick because I'm, like, a true optimist, I guess. Like, I was trying to convince y'all, like, 30 minutes after it happened on the night. I was like, whoa, wait. Watching him hit, like, two incredible fadeaway jumpers at the buzzer in like, his first or second summer league game, like, the confidence that's there at his age and, like, the smoothness of everything that went down, including how good his jumper already looks. But when he hit that Dirk fadeaway, dude, like, with the time clock expiring so confidently, oh, my God. Like, I know it's summer league. I don't care. Like, it turned me all the way around. Like, I was like, whoa, that, what was that?
Like,
oh, and then he almost absolutely posterized somebody. I forgot who it was.
Like, Summer League or not, that shot is difficult in general. Like, it was a spin off a screen, nearly just inside the three-point line, fade away 1 foot, and drains it like it was nothing. No, Summer League or not, that's still a difficult shot, and he made it look easy.
It was nice, for sure.
And I think that's what, like, you need to take away, or people should take away from, you know, going back to what Noah originally said about if the Spurs lose all of their Summer League games, it's not necessarily about the winning at this point right now. It's more about the development. Exactly what, just reiterating what Noah said, you know, we want to see what these kids or, you know, what these players are able to do. And so seeing stuff like that, like Josh Primo, you know, do that one-legged fadeaway, that's hard stuff, especially at 18. Like, you're not going to find very many players that can shoot that type of shot and then, you know, and then make it. So it's just like, it's good seeing them do that. And the same thing with, like, Trey Jones with his three-point shooting. Like, he was he didn't do it a lot last year, but now he's more apt to doing it. And three, like you said, Ty, three attempts per game. And that just shows that these players are growing and developing like they should be.
Yeah, and with Trey Jones, I think there's still, like Noah's mentioned before, that there's still some work in his jump and his three-point shot, but just it's encouraging to see that he's taking it, and whenever he does make it, that man's just cold. On one of the last threes they made, he just held the pose and didn't do anything else. I loved it.
Yeah.
So
he's looked really good.
So, all right, moving on to free agency. We all did our draft night, and then we did our free agency for the first night along with some other recaps throughout the time there. But we have a full list of the players that have officially been announced and as well reportedly been announced. And so we're just going to run through it real quick. And I also just got some details on one of the contracts, which is very interesting to me. So first is going to be Doug McDermott in a sign and trade with the Indiana Pacers, where the Spurs send a second round pick, if I'm correct. Someone correct me if I'm wrong on that. He signed for 3 years and $42 million. So about, how much is that annually? I can't think of the top of my head. I should have wrote this down.
What is that, $16 million a year?
Yeah.
3 years for how many?
42.
Is that $14 million, right?
It's 14.
It was $14 million. I remember this because...
That's basically Patty Mills' contract.
Yeah. And I remember this because his projected contract, according to our website, was like $13.5 million, it's only about a half million overpay, which is not that bad for one of the best shooters on the market. Following that is Zach Collins with a 3-year, $22 million deal. And I just got details of this from Bobby Marks. So his first year is fully guaranteed. His second year in this deal is 50% guaranteed. And his last year in the deal is not guaranteed at all. So... this is, and we're going to talk about Zach Collins in a little bit, but he's definitely going to need to earn his contract if he's going to stay with San Antonio.
Is it a player option or is it a team option? I'm assuming it's a team option, right?
I'm assuming it's zero, it's non-guaranteed, so it's essentially a team option.
Right.
In that last year. Then Thaddeus Young and Al-Farouq Aminu joined the Spurs in a sign-and-trade officially announced on Wednesday. They are both on expiring deals, Thaddeus Young for $14 million and Al-Farouq Aminu for $10 million. All of this as part of the DeRozan sign trade. Spurs also acquired a future first-round pick and 2 second-round picks. Jock Landell of Australia is signed on it for a 2-year money-unknown deal. Bryn Forbes is making a return to the Spurs on a completely unknown contract. Both of those deals are not officially announced yet by the Spurs, and both have been reported by Shams Charlton of The Athletic. I probably said his last name wrong, didn't I?
Oh, what did you just say?
Shams Charlton.
Shams Charlton?
Shams.
Oh, no. Well, now I have to segue into my unfortunate meeting with Shams Charlton today, or rather
no,
the one that didn't
Shams
happen.
Charlton. Shams Charlton.
Yes. Yes. I saw him today, and I was like, okay, you got to get up the nerves to go up to him and just introduce yourself, tell him you're a fan of his work, and leave him alone. And I finally had followed him around a little bit, like I was a little bit of a creeper, and then I was like, all right, I'm about to do it, I'm just gonna walk up, and some other writer just like walked up to him, they dapped up, they like just hit it off instantly, they clearly knew each other, and I was like, okay, well, I guess I just gotta like piss off now, like I can't say hi, like this, I'm just gonna look like an idiot. So I went home, and I ate some poutine, and then I just sat in bed. So that was my meeting with him. That didn't happen.
The time that, you know, Noah almost met Shams.
And then the last one is Chandler. God. All right, Chandler Hutchinson, who is coming from the Wizards as part of that really big five team trade, including Russell Westbrook, Spencer Dinwiddie, I believe. And so the Spurs, again, Chandler Hutchinson, who is also on an expiring $4 million contract. Let's go ahead and run through this. First with Doug McDermott. Mac, give me your thoughts.
Dougie McBuckets, bro. I love it. I mean, you basically replace, you know, Rip to number 8. He's always going to live in our hearts forever. His jersey is going to hang in the rafters like the legend he is. We love you, Patty Mills. We love you. Anyways, so McBuckets comes in, replaces Patty Mills, basically gets the same amount of money. He was almost nearly, if not over 40% three-point shooter last year. He's a 6'7 guy, so he can guard a lot better, or at least he has a lot more defensive versatility, you know, than opposed to some of the other players that we have on the Spurs, or that the Spurs had. And, I mean, with a name like Douglas McBuckets, like, it doesn't get any better, man. It doesn't get any better. So I love it. The Spurs got a good one, and I think he's going to fit right in with the team, with the squad. It's going to be amazing.
Nick, we haven't heard much from you yet. Go ahead.
What do you want me to talk about?
Doug McDermott.
It's a little disheartening that he only knows Texas for Whataburger and Tex-Mex, but like, this is going to sound weird, right? But I want y'all – the reason that I trust this guy with my life, right? Not actually with my life, but I want y'all to go – He reminds me of an actor, a specific actor named John Gallagher Jr. I want y'all to look at this guy. He was from the 10 Cloverfield Lane. He was the guy in it, not John Goodman, but the other guy. And he just reminds me so much of him. He was also in the Belko experiment that I just can't not like him. I don't know what it is. They don't even look all that much alike, but that's my take on him. He can shoot threes, and he looks like a cool actor that I know of. So
he kind of I can see it.
He looks a lot closer without a beard,
for sure.
He was also in Short Term 12. If anyone has seen that amazing movie,
now tomorrow Google's gonna be like, "What the hell? Why are there all these hits on John Gallagher?"
Noah, hit us up with your opinion of Dougie McBuckets.
I'm excited to have him aboard for the Spurs. Like, I think he's going to be a pleasure covering. Not only did he say he admires the Spurs organization like years and years ago, but I actually talked to his father today, and his father said Doug is extremely excited to wear a Spurs uniform. He's going to give the organization everything he has. Obviously, that's probably what you're going to get from anybody, but just hearing it from, like, his father, like, that's just really cool, right? You're getting a guy who, like Max said, he shoots about 40% from three. He finished in the top 10 percentile in cutters. Like, he finished nearly 70% at the rim. Like, he's going to bring some really good things to this offense, especially off ball that they're kind of losing in Patty. So I know he's not playing the same position. I know he's not the same player. I know they don't necessarily have the same skills, but he's somebody who could be really good for them, and he's developed into quite the playmaker. Like, I think he averaged a career-high 3.7 or 3.2 assists per game last year, which only helps ball movement, and I'm excited for the addition. Even if some Spurs fans are, like, underwhelmed by it, I think it's a really solid addition.
So he's coming off a career year in Indiana, 13.6 points per game on 53% shooting. That's the best in his career, off 38% from deep on 4.3 attempts, including 3.3 rebounds, only 1.3 assists. So I think your stat may got mistaken there. But overall, McDermott is, one of the best shooters in the class, a solid signing for San Antonio. And depending on what happens to Aminu and Thaddeus Young, Doug McDermott might be the oldest guy on the roster at, like, only 29. So it's – honestly, I love the signing. It was the first signing that broke news, and again, I think it's a great deal. I think we all are in agreement that this is a good deal for San Antonio in terms of you're adding shooting, you're adding size. Now, he's not the best defender, but he's not a defensive liability either. So, like, he might be a liability compared to some of the other defenders he's sharing the floor with, but he's not that bad. So, Doug McDermott, solid signing at 3 years and $42 million.
I just want to put this out there. I've been on the Dougie McBuckets train since like he first got into the league. I've wanted Doug McBuckets on the Spurs for a long, long time. And finally, the chickens are coming to roost because he's wearing the black and silver. So I'm glad.
All right, let's go on and move on to the second signing.
Wait, you got to get the grades. You got to get the grades. Noah, what is your grade for it?
A.
For this signing?
Yeah.
I'll give it a B+. Like, it's a solid signing. I think it was just a slight overpay, but I like it. Like, I think it's a really good signing, even if, you know, some people were underwhelmed by it. I think
it
was solid.
It's only $500,000 overpay. It's an A to me.
I was about to say, and hold on, Noah, because people give a lot of credence to your words. When you say overpay, it's not an overpay for a young, like, unproven team in our position in a small market. It's just like,
yeah, they had to do that. They had to do it. Yeah. Of course. Yeah, they had to do that. There's no other way you get guys like of his caliber. And I'm not saying he's like an all-star, but like you're not going to get a really, really like elite role player if you don't overpay them if you're San Antonio, especially when you're not in a position to win. Like, yeah, I think it's fine. And that's why I give it a B+. Like, is it a little bit of an overpay? Yes, but it's a good signing and he should be fine. Like, he should be really fine and help this team.
I just wanted to apologize for all the pots and pans that Matt keeps banging together for some random reason.
Oh, I'm not banging anything. I'm sorry.
We actually should be glad that we got away with a very slight overpay. Like,
oh yeah, yeah. For Dougie, like it's. I'm glad that he's like, okay. This goes back to the whole thing, like the argument online about no free agents want to come to the Spurs. And it's just like, that's definitely not true. It's just the Spurs are pretty picky about who they go after. I mean, you know, you hardly see the Spurs, you hardly hear about the Spurs or read about the Spurs being out there. There's rumors that these things are attempted, you know, like now the Ben Simmons report is out there that, you know, the Spurs are also interested. But that's kind of the extent of what it goes to. But if the Spurs kind of go after somebody, their batting average is kind of good, I would say. I mean, because they went after LaMarcus pretty hard and they got him. We don't know if they went after anybody else. I mean, obviously, you know, they had some whiffs here, like with DeMar Carroll and you know, Pau Gasol. But it doesn't really seem like they go after a lot of people, at least from what we can see. And it doesn't look like they strike out very much.
Yeah. I will say our free agency signings, since we transitioned from the last few years of RC to the reemergence of Brian Wright, have looked night and day. And I know we've only had like the one free agency that's been like incredible. And I would say this free agency has been maybe not incredible, but like the return that we got for DeMar alone is like such an easy win in my book. Like to call this offseason a win. Like, I don't know. I'm just trying to give Brian Wright some credit because, wow. He did stuff that I didn't think that Pop would allow him. I don't know if they're still calling all the shots, but it doesn't feel like the normal Spurs front office. So I'm thinking they're giving Brian a little bit of a leeway.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and move over to that sign trade. We'll come back to Zach Collins. But like you said, Spurs get more out of DeMar DeRozan than they did with Kawhi, or at least what Toronto got back for. I'm trying to think of how I'm phrasing it. I'm phrasing it wrong, but oh well. But they get Thaddeus Young, talented veteran, along with Alfred Camino, who is going on 30, pretty low contract, still solid, but still some question marks in terms of where he fits on this roster. Noah, let's go ahead and start with you with these two.
I like Thaddeus Young a lot. I think he's super underrated. Like, I got him in Doug McDermott's numbers in terms of assist numbers skewed earlier. He was really good as a playmaker from the elbows this year, and that was one of the things that, like, Kevin O'Connor had highlighted in one of the videos he made this year. He averaged a career-high 4.3 assists per game. He's a solid rebounder. He's still a really good defender. He's got a lot of positional versatility. Now, he's not a good shooter, but if San Antonio has guys like Brynn or Doug McBuckets or whatever out there, like, they should be fine, right? The only thing that I would say is, like, Aminu, I would argue, is, like, completely washed. Like, you're getting nothing out of Al-Farouq Aminu. Unfortunately, he only played like, what, 23 games a year ago, shot like 38%. The previous season, he only played like 18 and shot 29% from the field. Like, the guy is completely washed. I don't think he has any, like, in the nicest way possible, like, I don't think he has any sort of trade value. Like, you're looking at his contract this year, it's worth $9.7 million, or I guess it's $10.1 million or $10.2 million, but yeah, that's not an easily tradable contract, or at least you're not going to get anything good out of it. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of that, but I like the picks. Like, the picks are a big win, like a future first rounder, second rounders, like, that's great. I think that just the fact that they got anything out of DeMar, that's solid.
Overall, Aminu played 23 games and started 14. All 14 were for Orlando, and he only played 6 games with Chicago. So if he is staying with San Antonio, he's most likely end of the bench. So
yeah, strictly,
he shouldn't be playing for sure.
Yeah, strictly just insurance.
Nick, hit us. With a player specifically.
I don't know much about the freak. That's what I want to call him if he stays with us, because it sounds kind of cool. Like, I don't know. The general consensus seemed to be that he's kind of washed. Like, maybe not as bad as someone like a, I don't know, I guess like a Quincy Pondexter or something, who like did literally nothing for us whatsoever and provided almost no value. But like, it's whatever. It got DeMar out of here. We took his contract so that we could get DeMar out of here and get a first and 2 seconds in return. Now, Fatty Daddy, I knew a little bit about him, but I went back and watched a bit more, read a bit more. And just seeing Bulls fans and beat writers' reaction of them giving him up for DeMar and those picks, like, it seems like we got a pretty good deal, not to mention at the trade deadline, it's like almost guaranteed we could flip him to a desperate contender for a first. Like, that's how I see it, at least. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I'm excited, generally.
Mac?
I mean, so yeah, Nick is spot on about that. Like, he brings that veteran leadership that the Spurs obviously love, the Spurs organization obviously loves. And he can do, he's one of these bigs that can kind of do it. I wouldn't say do it all, but he has the ability to do it all. He's a pretty good, decent playmaker from the inside. He can dish it out, you know, to the shooters around him. And even the media, like Nick was saying, even the media, so on for the Bulls, the media gave the Bulls a D minus or a D. And then for the Spurs, they graded him a B or a B plus because of, you know, getting that. He's not a Lauri Markkanen type, or he's not, you know, Zach LaVine or whatever. But he's still a very, very good, solid role piece. You know, he's one of those high-end role pieces that's going to fit the team really well and do a lot for the team. And so for that, for Al-Farouq Aminu, and then for the three picks, like, the Spurs did a really good job. As much as we could complain about them getting Al-Farouq Aminu, like, whatever. That's kind of what you have to eat in order to kind of give up DeMar or to trade DeMar. So that's fine. Like Noah was saying, the picks in and of itself of themselves is what you really wanted, and what kind of the prize at the end of the road was for.
So I just want to go back to a Nick slander of Quincy Pondexter. He played in 53 games for the Spurs and averaged 5.5 minutes. Give the man a little bit of respect. Come on.
I think Aminu could give you 5.5 minutes in 70 games. So, like, Quincy Pondexter was absolute dog shit when he played for us a lot of the time.
Hey,
like, he was really bad.
He wasn't in the bench, but hey, he averaged 1.8 points a game, and those 50.
Yo, his per 36 numbers—they're looking pretty good.
Al-Farouq or Quincy?
Quincy. Quincy was 12-6. Yeah.
5 MPG of data. That's hilarious.
He said 12-6-3. The man was balling per 36, 50% from the field. Like,
so he put up 12-6-3 every across a span of what? Fucking
it
seven
took like
games?
7 or 8 games. Yeah. Yeah, no, they got to bring that back. I'm not quite sure. That's definitely an L for the Spurs front office. Like, I'm not sure what they're doing.
Show me his per 100 possessions. Then we'll make a decision.
Let's look.
85 points. I'm just kidding.
Hey, he had his positive net rating. 123 offensive rating, 111 defensive rating.
offensive rating. I'm gonna
go ahead and chalk that up to him like only getting to play when they were up big, and that was like the last time I think that they were like in the playoffs. So, yeah, no, Quincy Pondexter. There's a reason he's not in the NBA. Sorry, he's obviously better at basketball than me, but like that may be questionable too.
I mean, this just goes back to the whole like argument. Like, okay.
Quincy Pondexter. I just realized, why are we still talking about this?
Stats can be misconstrued. Like, and this has nothing to do with Quincy. I'm just saying, like, stats can be completely misconstrued, and it just looks like, oh, you can make anybody look really good depending on how you want to skew the stats.
But man, Rudy Gay's defensive rating. All right, let's
move on. The defensive rating.
Let's move on. Let's go back to Zach Collins, who we already talked about. We already broke down that contract.
You mean our starter by December?
Ooh, bold take. I'm going to write this spicy. Down.
Listen, if he's healthy, I think he will provide more as a starter than Jakob could. If he's healthy and picks up at least 80% of the original trajectory that he was on before all 1,147 of his injuries. All
right, so I'm writing down this bold take from...
That it's is not that bold. Like,
pretty spicy.
Is it? I don't think it's that bold.
I just feel like it is a little bold because he's not really like a rim protector, and he's not as good of a passer as Jakob or as good of a rebounder. Like, he can shoot.
What?
A little.
Noah giving Jakob some praise?
No, I love Jakob. Everyone knows I love Jakob. I just don't think the dude will ever shoot outside of like 5 feet of the rim. Like, I love Jakob. He is what he is. Like, he's a great rim protector. He's a good rebounder. He's a good short roll passer. He sets really good screens, but guess what? Like, screen points, they're only so valuable, and he's just like, there's zero range. Like, if you brought me out to the NBA court tomorrow, could I get a shot off? No, because I'm like 5'6". But if I was his height, I could definitely get off a jumper further than 5 feet from the from the rim.
Nick, when did you say Zach Collins is going to be a starter by?
December.
I was joking, but by December. I'm not joking, but like, all right, I think that if our exquisite medical staff can get John Collins healthy, he could provide more as in a starting role than Jakob, depending on our 1-3 situation. So I think it all depends on that.
So I didn't realize this person signed John Collins.
What? You know what I mean, Zach Collins.
Oh my God, Ty. Actually,
Shams fucking charlatan over here breaking news about John Collins, dickhead.
Damn.
Actually, guys,
you put him on blast. You put our boy on blast.
Hey, if I get called out for it, I'm gonna call you guys out for any little mistake. So
you already did. My heart broke when you told me that I was wrong about Doug McBucket's assist numbers. You don't think that my heart broke when you said that?
I was just making sure that you had your numbers accurate. I wasn't trying to
mess you.
No,
you're good. No, you're good. I really don't care. I just wanted to mess around with you, but no, I'm 100% fine. I'm gonna be here tomorrow. I will be fine.
I know Noah's gonna like be looking out on be able to play start playing Marvin's room.
I'm gonna have Tom do a welfare check.
I love Marvin Gaye.
No.
All right, going on is Zach Collins. Noah, go ahead.
I mean, yeah, I like him. I think Nick is right about him having like the talent level to like potentially unseat Jakob as the starter. I don't know if that happens in like year one, but it doesn't really matter if it does in year one. Like, there's a reason he was taken 10th overall. He has the potential to stretch the floor out to the 3-point line. He hasn't really been a rim protector, but I think that it could sort of come with time. Like, I think he has pretty good instincts. He's got pretty good length. He's a pretty good athlete. We'll see how good he is, you know, following the 3 or 4 surgeries he's had in the last like 2 years, but I like him. So it's a good signing. It's not that expensive. He's still young. He has promise. We'll see what he can bring. Like, I'm excited to see him once he's finally healthy.
Oh, yes. And my take hinges on him being healthy at that time, by the way. Not like injuries and all, he'll be starter. Like, if he can stay healthy, that's my take. All
right. I'm adding that to the note.
Yeah.
But some people were kind of complaining about this deal because, again, it is a 22-3-year deal, which is about $7 million on average. But as we saw with the guarantees, that it's not fully guaranteed going into this upcoming season, it's fully guaranteed. The season after, the seasons after, it's not. It's only 50% and non-guaranteed. So it's a very low-risk, high-reward situation for San Antonio, especially with the details of that contract. So if Zach Collins can stay healthy, I think he's going to – it's going to be a big – it's going to be a good home run for the Spurs. If he's able to stay healthy and really produced, that's a big thing for San Antonio, and they just got a guy on a deal. A guy that's only 23 was the former 10th overall pick in 2017, and they just added him to his to their roster for nearly – like around the MLE. That's a great addition. Now, say he doesn't pan out, say the injuries are a little too much – He never comes back 100%. Well, he's only 50%, then not even guaranteed for the next 2 years of that deal. That doesn't hit their cap in any way. So to have the contract both solid for both sides, so in terms of San Antonio has a safety maneuver if they need to throw it, and Zach Collins has a lot of money if he's able to prove it.
I agree. I know what you mean.
Mac, do you have anything to say on Zach Collins?
No, I like him. I mean, every time he's played San Antonio in the past, he's kind of cooked us. You know, San Antonio kind of never had an answer for Zach Collins. He's proven himself, so he's going to play with a little bit more tenacity and a little bit more aggression just because, you know, he's trying to earn, a longer extension or maybe sign it somewhere else for a little bit more money for in the next couple of years if he can stay healthy. So it's a win-win situation. You're basically paying a former number 10 pick a little bit more than Drew Eubanks' money, you know, which I guess you can spend that however way you want. But at the same time, once Zach Collins, hopefully he stays healthy throughout the rest of the year, he's going to provide a lot more than just center 3 minutes, like third center minutes.
All right, moving on to the other big man and probably one of my favorite signings, which is kind of weird for a guy that's coming out of Australia. Jock Landell, who is coming off of, I want to say, was it Melbourne, if I'm right, Noah? It was Melbourne United?
Yeah, Melbourne United.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he's coming off of Melbourne United after being the NBL's Grand Final MVP. You can't say final, it's Grand Final. Grand Final MVP, where he averaged 16.4 points per game, 7.8 rebounds, 2.2 assists, and 1.5 blocks while shooting 39% from three and like 149 total attempts. But Jock Landell, 6'11", mobile, 25-year-old. Noah, I'm pretty sure you've scouted this guy before, right?
Yeah. I've watched him at St. Mary's, and I've seen him when he played with Partizan and Zalgiris. He played in the EuroLeague and EuroCup, like with those two teams, before he got to the NBL. Those are better leagues than the NBL, and I kind of think he dominated the NBL because it's got such bad bigs. So I think we have to take some of his numbers with a grain of salt. I don't really think he's a rim protector per se, despite the 1.5 blocks per game. Like, I just don't think that's going to translate to the NBA. He's not super long. He's somewhat mobile, but he doesn't have great lateral mobility. He can shoot the ball for sure, and that's going to be something that's really important. You know, that's going to be really important for the Spurs. He can rebound well. He's a pretty good passer, and... you know, I don't know if he even unseats Drew Eubanks for, like, backup center. Like, I don't know. Like, I really don't know what he can do for the Spurs unless he just takes another jump in his, like, development, because I truly believe, and I could be wrong, but I truly believe the reason that he looks so good in the NBL is because they have terrible bigs. Like, they don't have NBA-level bigs there. Like, if there are NBA-level bigs, he was one of the only ones, so
we'll see how that translates. He also did say he could play the four, so, you know, for being like
in the NBA, I think he's going to get exposed there. Like, he just doesn't move that well. Like, I know he looked like he moved pretty well against the Australian competition, where the bigs really were bad. Like, they were very bad. I don't think it's going to look like that in the NBA. Like, I think he's going to strictly be a five. I don't see him playing any four.
What did he do because obviously he just won a bronze medal with Australia. I mean, and he was kind of one of their pieces there that I don't remember his stat line from the bronze medal game, but I mean, he was one. I mean, obviously you have Patty, you had Joe Ingles, Matisse, and some other guys that were obviously like the first guys to get the ball.
Dellavedova, man, come on.
but Jock Landell was one of those guys that, you know, that consistently played pretty well. So.
I mean, he played pretty well for Australia. Yeah, he averaged 13 points per game pretty much in the Olympics on like 54% shooting, 40% from three. I just also think that you see a lot of guys in FIBA play, and that includes the Olympics, that includes the World Cup. Like, they just play better for their country because it's a different game, and the NBA game is completely different. Like,
true.
When
true.
You saw him play against the United States, he was getting blown by smaller guys because he just doesn't have the foot speed to keep up with them. He did a pretty good job on Bam, but I would also add that Bam was pretty awful in the Olympics, so I don't know how much we can read into that performance. But overall, I think he's a good signing. He's not going to be too much money. And like, if he's the third string big, that's a pretty good third string big. Well, like, if he gives Drew some competition, great. That makes Drew better, you know?
Well, I know who our center is going to be when we play Miami. hey, he has a proven track record against Bam. Why not? Because Bam is not physical inside. Let's just be a matter of fact here. But I like Jock. I think it's going to be, and with all these signings, it's going to be a lot of competition between all these players because no one's minutes are guaranteed at this point. I think only like three starters really are penciled in to be a starter, and that's like DeJounte, Keldon, and Jakob at the moment, just to start the season. And I think Derek is kind of can be penciled in, but I think it's going to be more of will he start or come off the bench.
But especially if he's healthy, like coming up.
Yeah, that too. But going into like the depth, there's going to be a lot of competition for minutes. And like you said, Noah, if it just makes these other guys better with the competition, that's great. And that's how it's going to be because Drew told us on our previous podcast that practices are going to be competitive. So, and people are going to be needing to earn their minutes. And I'm really curious to see what Landale does if he gets an opportunity. Because I think it's another big that adds some shooting because the shooting numbers are there at the least. And if you can have a guy that can stretch the floor and have two centers that could possibly stretch the floor and Landale and Eubanks, that's really going to be intriguing to see how this team does going from a no-shoot centers to suddenly having two on the bench that can shoot the three ball.
Yeah.
Anyone want to comment on that?
Yeah, for sure. Sorry. Yeah, for sure. I agree with you 100%. We'll see if that ends up panning out for like Drew. I know he's putting in a ton of work, and like that's what I'm hoping for is that he ends up being a shooter. Because like we've mentioned it before kind of jokingly that he's 100% from three.
Three for three,
but
baby.
Like if he's comfortable shooting that and he's been working on it all off season and the coaching staff has given him the green light, which I think is really important that they wouldn't give that to him if they didn't believe in him, then that could be huge for the Spurs. Because if you can stretch out at every single position on the floor, that just gives you so much spacing, so many different opportunities and looks. Like, that could be huge for the Spurs. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it pans out. I don't know who is going to end up taking that backup spot. And I do think that the competition, just across the entire roster, like to push everybody, that's going to be good for the team in the long run.
Yeah, I think if Drew becomes, like, you know, even a standstill, just like corner three-point shooter, he actually, like, you know, I already like his play style, even though he's not quite a starter. Of course. I like his hustle, rebound, athleticism, kind of like not dirty, but chippy play style. And if he adds a three to that, he could become like legitimately like dangerous in those second units.
For sure.
There's not a lot of 3-and-D big men, right? Like, I think one of the things we haven't really mentioned with Drew is also he was one of the best rim protectors, at least by the numbers. I know he didn't play as many minutes as other big guys across the league. But, like, per, like, 100 possessions, he was, like, top 15 in the league in blocks per 100 possessions. So he can get up there. He's got a good vertical.
Yeah, of course, the context is that he's usually playing second units. But, like, still, like, you can see it watching him under the rim. You know, he swats the shit out of that ball. He doesn't commit a whole lot of fouls under there. It seems. I could be wrong, but he kind of has a knack for just like finding the ball with his hands. And honestly, I think because Drew has a little bit shorter of a wingspan, right?
I believe so.
Well, yeah, I feel like it's about the same as his height.
I feel like that helps him at his size under the rim. You know, maybe not on a chase down block or whatever, but like, it keeps him from flailing super long arms around, and it can kind of help him contest balls directly under the rim, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he's more compact like underneath the rim.
Yeah, you can rein in your arms a little bit if they're not, like, incredibly long.
Yeah, and control them.
I feel like that kind of helps. That also helps Luka with his on-ball defense because he has a short wingspan.
And I kind of wonder if I could ask you a question, like really all of y'all a question. And I'd love to ask Drew at some point, but you got to wonder, like, having played baseball, having to have like that astounding, like, eye-hand coordination, like reflexes.
100%.
Like, he gets up off the ground so quickly. Like, he's not super long, which sort of is a disadvantage in my eyes, but the fact that he has, like, the quick twitch, like, reactions to just get up there the second he anticipates, like, that's super valuable. So I wonder how much that is, like, from baseball. Yeah.
Yeah, he has great timing. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you just commit a bad foul. That's because he doesn't get a whole lot of PT. He's young. But I agree. Whenever you were saying, I want to ask on, you brought up baseball, I was like, you're about to say hand-eye coordination, because he can follow where people are. He's really good at following that. And, yeah, I think that's a super underrated aspect of Drew, is his some of his defense. Kind of like, Noah, how you brought up Keldon, a super underrated aspect about him is his, like, man-on-man defense. Like, it's super underrated.
Holy shit, guys. Getting this tortilla to rise.
Ooh. It's looking good. It's fucking
yes, we've been recording
good.
A podcast in Max Cooking, which you better share the tortillas, because I like tortillas.
Dude,
we're not going to get any of that.
I'm telling you, this is looking good, because yesterday when I tried to make these tortillas, they were not rising like this, and now they're fucking rising. Ah, oh, dude, it's looking good. All right, sorry. I sorry to interrupt.
per 100.
Resuming our. Or I'm mesmerized right now, sorry.
per 100 possessions, both Drew and Jakob had over 3 blocks per 100 possessions last season. So, and both had solid defensive ratings too, that were almost mirrored each other, with Jakob just having a better offensive rating. So, like, just going back with Noah saying, you know what? If Drew can be one of the first 3-and-D big men in the league, that should be an accomplishment.
Anyone else worried about how Forbes money is going to look?
I feel like they don't have a lot of money to spend, right?
Exactly. So,
like,
but what
probably
if they're like
pretty cheap,
like $3 million like a year, 4-year contract, fully guaranteed? No, like, just like, sorry, I had a nightmare about that.
I feel like he would have a nightmare about that too. Like, what if he ends up being so good and then like he's like, dang, I'm locked into this contract for like nothing.
But then, at that point, that's a very tradable contract, you know, like, to get him somewhere.
I think he's already tradable, like, no matter what you sign him for, if it's not too much, right? For, like, teams that need shooting at the trade deadline or whatever.
Yeah, very true.
I mean, he has a ring, after all.
That's true.
He does. He didn't really play in the finals, but he definitely had a ring.
He did help in some of the series, though, right? If I remember correctly. It's just, like, he didn't touch the finals floor, basically, for more than a few minutes.
I think the Miami series, like, he really went off on the Miami series, and that's where, like, oh my god, it's Brent Forbes. And then we had a bunch of, like, the Spurs contingency. Oh my god, I can't believe the Spurs got rid of him, and you see what happens when you put him next to a good player, and you have blah, blah, blah. But it's like, all right, dude, he's playing next, he's playing alongside Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Brooke Lopez. Like, chill. Relax.
Yeah, like after that Miami series, he pretty much became
flamed out.
Like, literally the last 16 games of the playoffs, like, after Miami, he shot 34% from the field, 30% from three, averaged 4.4 points per game. And we already know, like, what he brings defensively. So it makes sense why he went from playing pretty much 20 minutes per game to, by the time we got to the finals, it was under 10.
That's vintage Bryn Forbes right there. That's what the Spurs know, or at least, like, Spurs fans know for the most part.
And,
I was about to say, the Spurs don't know that, because they played the shit out of that guy.
And they brought him back.
Yep, so Brent Forbes is back. We don't know any
article on Air Alamo, if y'all want my perspective on how he could help, by the way. Plug.
I love the shameless plug. I love it. But we honestly have no idea what the Brent Forbes contract is. We don't know the years. We don't know the money. Shams decided to tweet in the middle of the night, oh, hey, Brent Forbes coming back to San Antonio. You guys have a good night, and not say anything. No follow-up, no nothing, no one else reporting it.
That was funny. I remember that. We were on Call of Duty or something. We were like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What? I came off. I was playing a game, and I heard a notification. I was like, all right, I'll look at it after this. I look at it, I'm like, okay, I got to go stream real quick.
Yeah, me and Nick were on it on Call of Duty, and we're like, we saw the thing come on. We're like, whoa, wait, what? What did he say? And then I had to like double. I took a double take because I was like, wait, is that one of those like fake Shams account or what? Because this is crazy. And no, it was an actual Shams account.
I saw actual Shams. The way I saw it was, oh, Bryn Forbes got signed by someone. Oh, the Spurs signed him. Interesting. I must talk about that.
Like in the least dramatic way possible, I was like about to go to bed. I had just like laid down. I opened my phone. I saw the notification. And I was instantly like, gotta write about this. But then the second I was done writing about it, I was like, oh man, like my like heart dropped a little bit. And then it started like beating fast. And I was like, well, now I can't go to bed. Like, what if he ends up playing like 30 minutes per game? Like, what? But then I was like, you know what? You got to be realistic. Like, they know what he brings to the table. It's going to be fine. Like, he's going to help. He's going to be fine.
Yeah. I legitimately think he will help. I don't think he plays the fourth most minutes on our team as a starter. So technically he was fifth, but like Derek, like, or minutes per game, I guess. Yeah, like being top five for Bryn, I don't see it in his future. I don't think he'll even be top 10 in minutes played for our team. So if he is, like, oh boy.
This is something you mentioned in your article, Nick, and I've talked about it multiple times already, that you are getting Bryn Forbes back, who was a major defensive liability for you, but you're no longer putting him around DeMar DeRozan and Patty Mills at the same time. Which, yes. I think that's very encouraging, because while Bryn Forbes is defensive liability,
and Marco Bellinelli,
it wasn't ideal to put him around three other defensive liabilities where your defense just went to shit whenever he was on the floor. Now, since you have a much better defensive personnel with like much better defenders, with Bryn Forbes being one of your lone liabilities, that's much more manageable than just throwing him out there with DeMar DeRozan, Patty Mills, and Marco Bellinelli, along with Jakob having to clean up everything.
Shout out to the Italian Stallion.
Where is he anyway? No,
Virtus Bologna, I think. He went back to the team that he like basically started his career with, I believe. Like, I think he's doing fine out there. He's having a good time. He's playing a lot of minutes, getting a lot of shots. So good for Marco. I know he blocked me. Nothing personal.
He blocked the entire Spurs contingency.
I'm pretty sure he blocked all four of us.
Oh yeah, probably.
I would 100% say that. Yeah.
But the 35 year old is enjoying his life and back in his homeland. So good on
him. Wait, I don't know what y'all are talking about.
Marco Bellinelli.
Who is that? Never heard of the guy. Is he a famous chef?
Yes.
Bellinelli, is that French?
He's pretty famous. He gets cooked all the time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What about that? I heard on Facebook he must be a chef because he talked about a big sausage, right?
Oh my yes. Lord. All right, we're cutting this off. I don't know how long this is going, so let's just kind of speed through these last two topics. We got to talk about the situation. Of course, Mac over here is, again, interrupting me.
What am I doing?
I heard some slurping. I heard something that was not... What? That was louder than loud.
What? You cannot say that word just out of the blue like
dude,
that.
I was literally not doing it. I was like, wow, dude.
I heard something that was not... I shouldn't have heard.
What are you thinking about, sir?
Hey, audio has caught it, so you can go back and listen to it. I am
just making tortillas here, okay? I'm not doing anything to incriminate myself.
All right. Getting a little more serious. So we all saw the whole situation on Spurs Twitter on Tuesday where a fan's teenage son was cussing out Kawhi Leonard.
That guy's not a fan.
It's just...
Air quotes.
Does anyone want to react to this before I go on my rant?
I mean, dude, like DeJounte put it best, that dude's a lame, and I'd go as far as to say he's a terrible father. And, you know, I mean, probably a terrible husband, too. We don't know. We don't know anything about that, so. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, like, that's just speculation, I guess, right?
We don't know anything about his personal life outside.
No one bring up 2017 tweets, by the way. no one knows of this man, so.
No, you're in Vegas for the summer league. I'm just curious what, because you obviously know what the environment's like. Just kind of give us. I need a more of a kind of a context for the setting, and then just kind of your opinion on the whole situation.
So, like, players and like executives and scouts and like coaches, like, they're just walking freely in between the games. Like, they'll sit like right next to you. Like, for example, I sat like a few seats away from Anthony Edwards and didn't even realize it until like 5 minutes later when I looked over. So, like, you're going to have an opportunity to like talk to them if you would want to, if they want to talk to you. But like, it is weird to me that this incident stands out, because really everybody's really cordial, right? Like, everybody's just excited to be there, see the new players, see the like guys who may make a roster. It's generally like a very happy environment. So it's just like weird that someone would go out of their way to like rehash a topic with someone they do not know and do it in a way where they're encouraging their like child to do something that really is not okay. And clearly it's not okay. Like, players aren't cool with it. His teammates aren't cool with it. Former teammates aren't cool with it. Other fans aren't cool with it. Like, it is just, it's really weird. Like, it stood out as a moment where it's like, what are you doing? So I mean, that's all I can provide for you there, because it's just so out of pocket and so weird. Like, even if you don't like Kawhi, just weird.
Literally he had NBA players like coming against him. Like, that's,
you know,
like, that's, even other players from other teams were out there kind of calling him out. So it's just like, oh my God, dude.
Yo, Noah, if you see Anthony Edwards again, you should go up to him and be like, hey, aren't you that famous bowler? That clip of him? Dude, I swear to God, he would get a big kick out of that, I think. Like, if you see him, just try it. Like, if it's possible to even say a word to him, like, just try. I bet he'd get a big kick out of it, dude.
I'll try. If I see him, I will definitely try. I can tell you, like, I'm kind of confused how that guy was able to talk to Kawhi. Because, like, most of these teams, they're sending, like, PR people with them, and they have security, like, at every single row. So I'm not even really 100% sure.
Well, he didn't talk to Kawhi, and it basically was just like there were maybe like five or six.
I saw it. I was just like very confused why like that why security didn't just like immediately remove them, because they're very aware of like what's going on. So it was just very strange. Like, when I'm watching the games or like when I'm at the games, security doesn't look at the game. They're like literally facing the crowd people. So that they can like monitor people the whole time. So whoever was doing that, like, it must have just been, I don't know, maybe they just like didn't have the like gall to like go over there and like tell them to stop. I don't know. It is an awkward situation, one that you wouldn't expect to be put in, mostly because this guy did something that's like totally not cool, but yeah, just really weird.
So my two cents on it.
Here's the rant. Let's do it.
No. So first off, let's remind ourselves that the person saying fuck you to Kawhi is a kid. And I think that's, now, is that socially acceptable? Fuck no. And it's a kid. So I'm giving a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, because he probably doesn't know better.
Like a teenager.
It's a teenager, but it's...
That's not a kid.
He's a teenager. He's a minor. That's the way it is. But, like, he doesn't know better, most likely, or something like that. But it still doesn't give him the excuse to say that. And
I don't think minors are immune to fists, bro. No, I'm kidding.
My lord.
It's not, like, built-in protection.
But, no, and thus, as a parent, you should be telling your kid, you can't, don't do that. That's not the way to go. Not fucking encourage him. Not fucking encourage him on Twitter out to the masses. Because you're doing two different things. One, you're encouraging your kid to go tell complete strangers to fuck off and go fuck themselves. So fuck you for that, first off.
All right, chill out, Tucker Carlson.
Second.
Let's calm down with voice inflection.
I know. See, when I get my rants, I go into a mode.
You've been in a mode all day, buddy.
I know. It's been
I'm not going to stand it. Like, when I helped you move in, you need to calm down. Fucking beat the shit out of you.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. No.
And I swear, as God is my witness, I will.
He will.
I will hold you upside down until you pass out.
And spank your bottom like a little tiny newborn baby.
So going back, and then so first encouraging your kid to go fuck off, and then doubling down on that.
Sorry. It's not that I wasn't taking you seriously, but the way that you said, have you ever seen, sorry, you can cut this out completely because it doesn't matter.
No, don't cut it out.
No, I like
that. Have you ever
I
seen
like
that video where the like little girl goes like, fuck off. You ever seen that? That's like the way you said that was like exactly how she said that. Like it was too perfect. I'm sorry. I am taking you seriously, but the way you said
No, I get you.
Ty, by the way, when you said kid, that reminds me, who read the Jason Kidd article?
Oh, that was weird.
We'll come back to that. That was disturbing.
We'll come back to that.
All right, we'll swing back around.
Let me finish my rant that I haven't finished.
All right, hurry up because we've
no. And so, and then this individual, this father, goes back to Twitter, posts it on Twitter, of course, to highlight his son's deed for some reason, encourage it, and then he'll double down on it, laughing at jokes of players and other like fans just roasting the shit out of you and thinking that this is funny. It's not funny. It's not cute. It's just, it's poor behavior. And then also add on the history that we all are aware of. It's just, this man's just not a good person. And it's sad to see that some fans, other fans across the NBA are going to see this and think that this is what Spurs fans represent. So
yeah,
fuck that guy. And it's just like, I just can't believe that one, he allowed his son to do it and then he encouraged his son to do it. And everyone else, don't go do this. Don't go do this because I don't know, like Noah said, I don't know how the fuck he did not get kicked out of this event. Like this would get you banned in any other arena, in any other sport. This would get you banned from sporting events and maybe even for a lifetime. So don't go do this shit. Don't go do this. This is fucked up. That's all I have to say. And that's the end of my rant that had a funny fuck you to it.
If I can add something real quick, like back to the point where it's hard to get to these players. Like I told you, I sat like pretty close to Anthony Edwards, and someone who was sitting like right behind him or like right in front of him, rather, Anthony Edwards like poked him on the shoulder and like told him like nice jersey because he was wearing an Anthony Edwards jersey. And the guy tried to like take a picture with him. And security went over there, even though Anthony Edwards was the one who like engaged him and was like, no, you can't. And like, no, you can't sign your jersey either. Like, you need to move.
What?
So, yeah, it was really weird. Like, they're like, they do not want like the general public having contact with the players. Like, there's reserved seating for like family and players who are here. But like, it's right next to general admission. Like, you can literally be like right next to them. And like, yeah, it was really weird. Like I'm just really baffled how this like happened because it shouldn't have. Like it's not on the security necessarily, but like, it's just like a weird thing that happened. Like it shouldn't have happened.
So just to give you some context, like, or like another example of what Noah's saying, there's the same person that caused this hysteria. There's another video that he posted of Keldon signing his son's jersey because his son is wearing a Keldon jersey, and immediately like, as soon as Keldon takes the Sharpie and writes just a little bit, security comes over and is already like taking away the marker from Keldon and being like, hey, no, you got to move. Because they don't want, you know, to Noah's point, they don't want these fans interacting with the players sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy.
Especially now with COVID still going on and everything like that.
Exactly. But yeah.
My
like in a normal year, they would. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. I was just, go ahead.
Oh, no. Just my ending remark. Just because you hate or love a player, because it's Kawhi, and he doesn't give a shit, honestly. That's just how he is. But we've seen this before. Fan interaction's gone wrong. But players don't know you. Players don't know you at all. Yeah, you might know the player, but that player does not know who the fuck you are. And that does not give you the right to just go up to a random stranger and tell them to fuck off. Because I said this on Two Shots podcast that I recorded earlier tonight. Treat others how you want to be treated is something I've always been taught. And do you want someone just to randomly come up to your face and tell you to fuck off? No.
What if you're a masochist?
Well, if you're a masochist, that's clearly what you're into. But that's not the general public. But
sorry, man. I'm on this tonight.
As a general public, but if you just treat others how you want to be treated, these players are people themselves. Yes, they're getting paid millions, but they are still people, and we've seen some of these players go with depression and just other issues. So treat people how you want to be treated, and just don't be an asshole. That's my final message.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Over under. Final thing of the podcast. Vegas has the over under for the Spurs at 28.5 wins. Let's just do a lightning round. You going over or under, over. Mac?
Over.
Nick?
30. They're going to do over. 33.
I'm thinking 33, which in the context of a... This is an 82-game season, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, 33. So, like, I guess that would have been, like, what, 25 or 26 this last season. So, like, that sounds about right. Yeah, 33. 32, 33, something like that. So, over for sure.
Noah?
Yeah, I'm over as well. Like, I think that's a good area.
All right, 4-4-4, we're all over. I think this team's actually better.
We're going to lose, and it's going to go under.
It's going to go under, yeah. Just our luck, because the way things always work out, our luck isn't it. We just jinxed them all.
But you know what? That's not the worst luck if you go under.
I know, because...
Win-win season.
Paolo, baby.
Win-win season, as I've
always Paolo said. Ranchero. I actually forgot his name.
Paolo Banchero.
Yeah, earlier someone knew who I was talking about because I said I want to draft. I couldn't remember, so I said Huevos Rancheros, and they were like, "Oh, you're talking about him." Like, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'd rather say a funny thing than butcher someone's name and be like extra offensive.
Damn,
it's not that I can't pronounce it; I just can't remember.
Shots fired, 100% shots fired.
Wow.
And Chet Hand Grenade. I forgot how to say his last name too.
Holmgren.
Holmgren.
Yeah.
That's a
weird last name. It's an N, I think.
Holmgren. Okay. I remember Holmgren. That. Chet Holmgren. That is a redneck backwoods ass last name. Chet Holmgren.
Where's he from? Isn't he from France?
He's from Minnesota.
Oh.
Who is the guy from France then? That's like
Victor Wembanyama.
Wembanyama, dude, yeah.
And isn't he like the second overall like
he looks like a good
he's not gonna be draft eligible for I think like another 2 years, but he's pretty much like the consensus like best prospect non the NBA right now.
Nice. All right, let's wrap it up. We've been going on for a long time. Give us your plugs, tell us where people can find you, starting with Macintosh Mac Pena.
What up? So you can find me at Mac Pena. You can also find some work at Project Spurs. We're doing a lot of good things over there. Obviously here at the Line Pod. And then look out for some new things that we're working on behind the scenes. You know, we're working on some stuff to expand a little bit, and we'll have more stuff coming out pretty soon.
Nick, tell us where they can find your writings now.
Woo.
Well, you can find me, which is more important, at Nick Yarbrough on Twitter, NICYARBRO. And you can find my writings at Air Alamo. I just published my first ever article in
Congrats.
A debate series, kind of a debate series. More like a I win, you lose series, because I'm always correct. So...
That's a good way to
anyways start. Noah, there you go, bud.
Noah, where can they find you, your writings, and your own podcast?
Yeah, you can find me at n_magaro, magaro. You can find my words at Pounding the Rock. I'm doing a lot of Vegas coverage right now, so really excited to be here. And then you can find me on my podcast at Alamo City Limits. You can find it by searching Alamo City Limits or Pounding the Rock, and that's about it.
All right, you can find my stuff at the Ty Jaeger, doing highlights, doing some of my own writings at jaegerreport.substack.com. Go check it out. Make sure to follow at the Line on Twitter at the Line Pod, as well as follow us on YouTube and Twitch for live streams, new videos, stuff like that. We're gonna make a whole cooking video for tortillas from Mac. It's gonna be
what?
Awesome. we talked about this earlier. Did you already forget that we were gonna make you do a cooking video on your tortillas?
Yeah, I totally forgot.
Tortillas.
Roll the R's,
bro. Are you eating the tortillas right now?
You gotta taste them. I see they're coming out well.
Well, how are they? We need a conclusion to this.
I still gotta fix it a little bit. Not there yet.
All right, he's not there yet. We'll perfect the recipe once we get there.
Yep.
But for Mac Pena, for Nick Yarbrough, for Noah Magaro, George, I'm Ty Jaeger.
Your voice dance.
I ran out of breath. For Noah Magaro George, there you go. Is that better? I'm Ty Jaeger. This is At the Line. We'll see you guys next time.
Catch you later, alligator.